I'd like to welcome everybody to the third Romcast podcast. I'm Troy, Next Gen Cowboy. Our other host this evening is Pennywise, a.k.a. Garrett. And joining us this evening is the Final Fantasy hacker Lenophis, Jerry. Welcome to the podcast this evening.
Thank you. It's awesome to be here.
I guess the first question we have for you is how exactly did you get started ROM hacking, basically?
Well, a long time ago, when I was still in high school, in 1999, I want to say, I don't even remember how it came to be, but I managed to find the site Zophar's Domain, which I think you guys are familiar with. And I found an emulator on there. I think it was Nesticle. And I was, you know, I just saw some old Nintendo games available. I'm like, this is the greatest thing ever. And that's basically how I got into emulation. And then in 2001, 2002, I think 2001 or 2002, Dish released his utility, Final Fantasy Hackster. And that's basically what got me going into it. You know, and for the longest time, I was a real crappy hacker. I just used editors, and I was young at the time. I didn't know anything.
We've all been there.
So, just curious, what motivated you to get behind that crappy hacker thing?
In 2004, one of my roommates who I live with, we were working on a Final Fantasy II project at the time. I made an editor for it, and I wanted to dig deeper into the hacking. I still couldn't do any kind of assembly hacking at the time. And we saw this game that had a lot of potential left on the table, and we wanted to see if we can try and capture some of that and release it as a an updated balance hack, so to speak. And I don't know if it was met with any kind of success. I didn't really check for that, but you know, we really tried to just capture some of the glory the game could have had and just give it out there for everyone to try. It was a lot of fun. Oh, 2005 is the year where Final Fantasy VI started.
And changed your life forever.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Dragon's Brethren. I think, I was still primarily on Zophar's Domain at the time. I was messaging him back and forth, and we saw a lot of untapped potential with Final Fantasy VI. And we're like, hey, you know, what if we try and, you know, balance this game out a little bit? And the hack, you know, it was just called the Final Fantasy VI hack at the time. We, you know, we couldn't even come up with a name for it. Eventually, we put a poll up on romhacking.net. And he's like, okay, you guys, you know, we're having trouble naming this hack. Give us some names. We'll see if we can use it. And then I think it was Panzer Ocarina. I'm not really sure how I pronounce his name. He pitched the name Pandora's Box. And that really clicked with the team. And that's how this giant Final Fantasy VI hack got named. It's pretty cool. And I'm sorry for rambling there.
No, it's quite all right. I wanted to step back, if we could, for a moment to your Final Fantasy 2 days and ask you about Jade.
Jade. I'm not really sure how I got the motivation to do that. I guess I just saw Dish's Final Fantasy Hackster and I was like, okay, I can probably do something like that. So I picked up MFC, you know, I started doing C++ coding, really started to pick it up, and you know, I got tips from some of my buddies on, okay, how do you do this kind of concept? How do you do this? And Dish ended up doing a lot of extra work to teach me how to program, but I made this editor. It's gone through, I think, two rewrites. I was going to rewrite it again, and, you know, the Final Fantasy VI hack started, and I never really got back to it, and unfortunately, Jade got put on ice, and yeah, I feel like there's still a lot of work I can do with Jade, and I'm sorry that I wasn't able to, you know, get back to that and finish it. Because there's still a lot of work with that hack I can do. Because right now, it'll do the world map, it'll do shops, character stats, monster stats. Won't do any kind of sprite editing, but it'll do, well, that's basically it. And then spells. And you know, I wanted to add in dungeons. Played Demi-Force's translation. And if you played the NES version, you guys may have known how notorious the hack is, or the game is in general, where you go into a door and there's nothing in there. And then you try to walk out and you're met with 15 battles just trying to walk these three steps or whatever it is. And I don't know, it just seems like it was a lot of wasted space on something like that.
I always look at Final Fantasy II as, I don't know, it's a strange, strange game. And you
Yeah, it is.
You brought it up perfectly in that there's so much potential there that was never realized. Nasir, the, you know,
yeah.
Gabali, just, yeah. I feel like he's the patron saint of ROM hacking, but at the same time, he created this, I don't want to call it an abomination, but it's just so out there compared to everything else in the series and everything else at the time.
It is. Yeah, and I'm not really sure how much of that he was responsible for, because I guess he was just the programmer, you know, the mad genius who put, who kind of glued it all together. And, you know, if you've played the first three games, you know that the games are kind of buggy, and, you know, it's okay because they're all fantastic still. And, you know, in Secret of Mana was the same way. I think that was his last Square project that he did. But he programmed the first three Final Fantasy games. I know he programmed Secret of Mana. I'm not sure what other projects he's done off the top of my head. They're all really fun. They're all kind of buggy, but that's okay.
Nobody's perfect.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, so before we get into the whole Final Fantasy VI thing, there's a few more odds and ends.
Okay.
So just from my standpoint, I'm just curious if, because I do the translation hacks, if you ever toyed with that idea instead of focusing on a hack.
I've thought about it, but in my younger days, I saw, and maybe this is just because of the community, you know, how youthful it still was. The community as a whole was just kind of immature, and there was a lot of, you know, negativity surrounding projects. You know, some people didn't like this, some people didn't like that, and I didn't really want to get myself involved with that aspect of it. So I just kind of took a step back and like, okay, maybe if, you know, we mellow out and we can just gel a little bit, maybe I can try and get back into it. And then, I don't know, I never really seemed to pick it up after that. But, you know, it's something I've always thought about, but at the time I just didn't want to.
Yeah, I guess the ROM hacking community is notorious for that whole teenage angst, I guess is what you could call it.
Yeah.
Good times. Good times.
And just one more. You had mentioned that you had played around with, like, C++ and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
So what exactly is like your background in programming? Like, are you like self-taught basically?
I am mostly self-taught. Back in the days of, oh, this is almost 20 years ago already. My mom bought a 486 something or other. It's like 35 megahertz in IBM or something or other. And the only thing it had was QBasic. It was like, okay, this is kind of cool. Let's try this out and let's do this and let's do that. And then, my elementary school at the time, they built a media center with all kinds of little, you know, 20 megahertz. You know, it's a step up or two from the Apple IIs. I'm not sure if you guys remember those or not. Played Oregon Trail and all kinds of spelling stuff. And
elevator and, action.
Yeah. And there was a weird scripting program you can call. It was called Linkway, I think it was. It was a little bit of a, you know, you can kind of do some things with it. We concentrate on trying to make games with that. And that was kind of how I got started into doing it, even though I didn't really understand anything of what I was doing at the time. I met one of my best friends, my roommate, at this media center. You know, he was a pretty good spriter at the time. He could draw Samus, you know, Super Nintendo Samus 16-bit quality. And it was presentable. It was really good. You know, we just kind of hit it off from there. And we started to do the games, and I guess that was that.
So this is something you've been interested in for a very, very long time, it seems.
A long time, yes, yes. And I've actually thought about becoming a game developer, so to speak. I've had a lot of ideas on trying to make games. Nothing would be completely unique because it seems like everything's been done like three or four times. You know, it's just, that's just kind of the nature of stories, though. You see a movie or, you know, you hear a song or read a book and it seems like, okay, there's nothing really new per se. That's kind of how I was feeling with games. I just take certain aspects from pre-existing games or maybe even certain characters, kind of put do this, do this, do this, do this, and just make a game out of it.
Nothing wrong with that, really. Either taking elements that have been done before and refining them, or, you know, putting it in new scenarios and stuff like that.
If you ever do decide to do your own game, you wouldn't have been the first person in the ROM hacking community to do that.
Oh, I'm sure not.
I think Demiforce made quite a bit of money with his game that he made. I think it was called Trist.
Trist. I don't think I've heard of that.
Yeah, he made a game called, like, no, Trism. It's called Trism.
Oh, Trism, okay.
Trism. It's a puzzle game that he made. I think it was like an Apple iStore app or something. I think he made a bunch of money with that one.
Okay.
If you do go that route, we'll be pulling for you.
There's actually contests you can enter for making your own games. I think one of them's called Ludum Dare or Ludum Dare.
Yeah, that's a 48-hour time span where you make a game from scratch or something like that. And I'm not sure I could do one with that kind of a time limit.
I just know that one because another community member called Ryusi, he does that. I think he's made a few games for that contest.
Oh, really?
But anyway, so I think we want to get back on track.
Okay.
So I guess now we want to focus on Final Fantasy VI. Troy, just curious, have you played Final Fantasy VI recently?
The last time I played it was a long time ago.
Yes.
PlayStation 1 version, I think, was the last time I played it, although I might have checked out the Game Boy Advance version.
Okay.
The last time I played Final Fantasy VI was when it was called Final Fantasy III, but...
Oh, well, then you're doing worse than I am.
Yeah, wow.
Well, but no, I bought it used at GameStop, so it was sort of like 2000-ish.
I played them all when they were released. Six was the big one because my cousins had, or, you know, three, what it was called at the time was the big one. Because my cousins had bought a new SNES for a bunch of stuff, and we got to play that. I always had the Genesis, so I never actually got to play it in my own house, but I'd go up there and play it.
Oh, the Genesis, it was a good system. It had a good library of games, too.
Yeah, I had Genesis really Star Genesis 4, too. And that's all that matters.
Yeah.
And so, Shining Force.
Yeah, Shining Force, yeah. The first Shining Force, I guess, is not too good, but the games after that get progressively better.
If you tried to convince my 8-year-old self of that, I would have snapped on you, I'm just saying.
Well, I like Shining Force, too. I used to own it as well when I had a Genesis.
I used to rent Shining Force, too, and me and my brother, we would have, you know, the files on there, and we'd rent it, and every time we'd bring it back to the video store, we'd hide it behind other stuff so nobody would rent it and delete our files.
Yeah, I think I used to do that, too, when I used to go to the video store.
My bad. Anyway, back on track.
So I think Final Fantasy VI has a development story that's sort of out of the norm for most games, in that it was sort of the game that got caught in the middle of a divorce between Square and Nintendo, if I'm recalling correctly.
It was that, yeah, that might have been it, because that was one of the last games released for the Super Nintendo made by Square.
I think it was originally intended to be made with the CD add-on to the Super Nintendo, if I'm recalling correctly.
Secret of Mana was, definitely. I know that.
Mm-hmm.
But I recall that they had even made a demo of some sorts, showing off that capability, maybe, and that I think it was Sony was supposed to do the CD add-on.
Nintendo and Sony did a lot of collaboration with that system. Many of us probably know that Sony was responsible for the sound chip in the Super Nintendo SPC or whatever it's called.
But if I recall correctly, basically something happened during the development of Final Fantasy VI that sort of changed the perspective of it. And maybe I'm just generalizing it or assuming too much, but I think it may be that they got caught into something that a situation Square didn't exactly like. So they basically rushed the game out. They didn't want to sort of cancel it or anything. They just get it done as quick as possible and be done with Nintendo.
That could be. Final Fantasy VI was definitely a rush game programming-wise. There's a lot of issues and bugs, and the game could have used probably 3 or 4 months of development time to iron a lot of that stuff out. That could be, yeah.
So going on questions for you as towards Final Fantasy VI.
Okay.
Obviously, the game must be kind of important to you, or else you probably wouldn't have spent so much of your spare time working on it. I mean, so what is so special about Final Fantasy VI for you?
Well, I'm not really sure. The series as a whole was important to me, because I remember, you know, going back to the rental store story, the first Final Fantasy game was in the local video store. I kept renting that, and I fell in love with the series. And then my roommate, you know, my really good buddy at the time, he had just bought Final Fantasy VI for $90 or whatever it was, because, you know, Super Nintendo games were really expensive back then. And the game was awesome. It was visually awesome. The sound was awesome. We had just played Final Fantasy IV, you know, which was called II at the time. And it was it's an incredible step up from that game to six, you know, three, you know, what we saw as three at the time. And it was a massive improvement. And I don't know, something with the game must have stuck with me because the story was good. Everything about it was just fantastic.
So what exactly soured it for you then, as far as making all these improvements?
You have obvious issues like the sketch glitch, where you can ruin your game, so to speak.
What's the sketch glitch?
In the first release of the game, there were two releases of the game. There's version 1.0 and 1.1. Version 1.0 has what's called the sketch glitch, where one of your characters has this command called sketch. You sketch the enemy, you can do one of their attacks back at them. Unfortunately, because there's a bad index, I'm sure you two know what I'm talking about when I say bad index with ROM hacking and assembly, but because of a bad index and a bad lookup, some random garbage data just gets referenced instead, and it completely destroys your save RAM, or it can. Your game will probably crash. Your characters will change sprites, they'll change palettes, the spells you know, completely overwritten, your inventory, completely overwritten, and if you can somehow escape that battle, you will end up with, like, you know, like 20 slots of 255 of this kind of item, or you'll have 10 slots of this kind of item, and your money might get maxed out, and your step count will increase to, like, 3 million, and, you know, crazy stuff like that.
It's a mess. It really is a mess.
It is a mess, yeah. So I saw that kind of bug, and Master Zed, who was documenting a bugs list for a while, was, you know, releasing information on different kinds of bugs with different kinds of situations. Like, wow, this game is broken. And, you know, it was with this Final Fantasy VI hacking project where I finally, you know, picked up the Super Nintendo assembly language, you know, which was the same as the Nintendo assembly language. You know, they're essentially the same chip. One has slightly more instructions, different improvements, et cetera, et cetera. But they're basically the same chip. So I learned the Final Fantasy VI, you know, I kind of studied the game. I learned how the ROM works, kind of. Studied the RAM and made a couple of not so great fixes of my own, a couple of okay tweaks. And that's kind of, I guess, just kind of how I fell more in love with the game. It's like, okay, I have this challenge. What can I fix now? can be fixed that hasn't been fixed yet?
When you take on a project like this, do you consider it a challenge that has to be overcome?
I was like that with I was like that with my first couple of hacking projects with Final Fantasy I. I was like that with my Final Fantasy II projects, and Pandora's Box was like that for a long time. What helped is that for the longest time, I was living with my grandma, and I was her caretaker. So I was able to devote some time to, you know, specifically working on this. And then she fell ill, and she passed away in 2011, and I wasn't able to devote the kind of time to that project anymore. So it just kept slipping back further and further. And I've been working so much and just trying to work with life. And right now, the project isn't really going anywhere, sadly.
No. It happens. Personal life,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, yeah.
It takes priority.
Mm-hmm.
You had mentioned a bug list for the game.
Mm-hmm.
I think your signature at romhacking.net at one point it said, like, X number of bugs fixed.
Yep. I think the previous number I had written down there was 119 unique bugs fixed. And that signature had a link to a post. Probably pull it up for you guys, but the listeners won't be able to see this. It's at, I'm not really sure how to pronounce this. We just call it the Den. And I made a documented list of every single bug that we had fixed. Most of these were borrowed patches from other patch authors. Some of them that we've just kind of fixed along the way ourselves and had to give a lot of insight on what these bugs were. It's an insane list.
Just out of curiosity,
mm-hmm.
You have, well, you're estimated, I guess, you have 119 bugs, but how many bugs total do you think are in the game as opposed to what you fixed?
Wow.
How big is the number? Can you give an estimation?
I'm not sure how accurate this is going to be, but I think general estimation, I can probably put that number closer to 200 bugs, and it's just massive. You know, there's a lot of bugs that won't have any noticeable effect or won't have any kind of real effect. You know, we go to our way to fix some of those just to say we can. I guess more of them can be called exploits.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how familiar, you know, Garrett is with it, but things like Wind God Gao, or, you know, Psycho Cyan equipping, you know, the offering, and yeah, stuff like that's just, it's nuts.
Yeah, it's incredible how broken this game was, and it didn't even turn out into a fixed bug project. It turned into kind of a restoring the balance kind of project, not a difficulty hack. I think some of our listeners will know what a difficulty hack is. We wanted to make the game harder, but still be fun, and that was the premise of the project, and we fixed a lot of bugs along the way to accommodate that.
Kind of restoring the difficulty as it was meant to be by the developers instead of making it traditionally harder.
Exactly, yes.
So I'm just curious, going on the whole hack thing. Now, I had read that Pandora's Box is not really a retranslation. It's more of a rewriting.
Yeah, it is. About a year into our development of the project, we decided that we wanted to take the story into a new direction. So we use aspects of the Final Fantasy VI Advance translation and some of Ted Woolsey's work from the original translation, kind of mesh them together, and then throw our own story into it to make it kind of a brand new game, so to speak.
Cool, cool.
And this leads us into the FF6 Advance. So how do you feel about that game as a whole?
As a whole, the game is vastly superior. It's probably the best of the three ports, you know, the best of the three versions that I've played for Super Nintendo, PlayStation, and Game Boy. The Game Boy Advance has the objectively better translation. There's a couple of lines that are famous, you know, with the, you know, the whole series has this issue. There's the one scene early in the game where Kefka gets beaten in the desert at Figaro Castle, and in the original game he says, "Son of a submariner, you'll pay for this." And a lot of people like that. It's kind of like the Castlevania, "Die, monster. What do you here?" You know, blah 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 blah. What is a man?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Best line ever.
And I don't remember exactly what the advanced port of six said. It was like "son of a sandworm" or something like that. And, you know, classic lines tend to, I guess we can just attribute this to being older, because we don't like when things change like that. So we can't, it kind of rubs us the wrong way. I didn't really mind that specific, you know, because it's like, okay, Kefka's just angry at the situation. He's going to say something, maybe throwing a pun, whatever. And, you know, I was okay with it. They did fix some of the bugs. The battle seemed to flow a little bit smoother, which was always a plus. Some of the spell animations kind of lagged a little bit. That's probably because it's not a true code translation. It's kind of like a interpreter. That's the term Gemini used when he was looking at the PlayStation port. The code was just translated to work for the PlayStation. It wasn't really built for the PlayStation, I guess. I'm not really sure what I'm trying to say there.
No, that makes sense. I'm sure that comes into play in Chrono Trigger and FF6. For those listeners that don't know, both of those games, when they were released on the PlayStation as part of Final Fantasy Anthologies and Final Fantasy Chronicles, respectively, were terrible.
Yeah.
They had massive load times prior to battle, and Linophis could give you more insight into everything else that was wrong with FF6, I'm sure.
Yeah, and they actually added some bugs to both of the original PlayStation release and the Greatest Hits release. They each have their own issues that are, and that's on top of everything else that's with it. Chrono Trigger was probably ended up being the worst of the ports for that. You know, just to sidetrack for a second. Sorry about that.
No, it's quite all right.
I think Final Fantasy IV ended up being the best of the four games that were ported, probably because it suffered the least from the load times.
That was also my first time playing Final Fantasy V, so I can't give I couldn't say objectively whether it was better unless I went back and compared it to the SNES. You know,
I honestly can't remember, because I remember buying the games for the PlayStation. I think it was Final Fantasy Chronicles or something.
That's FF4 and Chrono Trigger.
Yeah, that was the Chronicles package, and I can't, maybe I could see the load times, but that was probably, that's been so long.
Yeah, Final Fantasy V didn't end up that bad with the PlayStation port, but it was still noticeably worse if you compare it to the Super Nintendo version, and you will see the obvious difference. The sound quality took a little bit of a hit. It was like that with all four of the ports, but I don't know, Five actually ported okay. It's still bad, but it's okay.
Going back onto the Game Boy Advance port of Final Fantasy VI,
Okay.
From what I've read on the internet, a lot of people like to trash the game for its sound.
Some songs did end up being worse. There were a few songs that I thought turned out better on the Game Boy Advance. Maybe they just took advantage of the instruments that they had available to them, or however they wanted to port it. I don't know, it's kind of a mixed bag. I like some of the songs though. Some of them not as much, but it's still a fantastic soundtrack.
Well, I just seem to, I guess the common argument is that the Game Boy Advance can't handle the sound, the original sounds from the Super Nintendo properly or some such nonsense.
Well, I guess maybe, but then I just saw an update to the sound restoration hack for the Game Boy Advance version, so I'm not really sure how much argument. I guess that could be attributed to effort, how much work Square wanted to put into it at the time, or TOES. I forget which company actually did the ports.
Toes did it.
Yeah. So I really can't speak to that, but it's still a good port.
And also, just out of curiosity, more negative things that I read about the port is that the people don't seem to like the extra dungeon and I think they did a few portrait changes. I mean,
Yeah, let's see here. The Dragon's Den, the main additional dungeon of Final Fantasy VI Advance, is not that well done. I've actually received a lot of requests to add that dungeon to vanilla Final Fantasy VI for the Super Nintendo. I'm like, that's a lot of work. It just does not seem worth it. It could be done. I just don't want to do it. Sorry, guys. And then Gideon Z, he has come to me on a couple of times. Couple of occasions to port the script from Final Fantasy VI Advance into the Super Nintendo game. That's more doable, and that'd probably be a lot less work. I just still don't want to do it. Sorry, Gideon. let's see here. For the rest of the contents of VI Advance, I don't know. The dungeon was okay. The bosses were just rehashes, I guess. They could have used a better, what's the word I'm looking for here? Plot device, I guess. For this dungeon, why you want to go in here, why you want to complete this dungeon. It just seems like the dungeon wasn't really thought out that well.
The other games, when they got the advanced ports, they generally have the bonus dungeon where you use some of the characters not in the main party at the end of the game. So,
Yeah, with those dungeons, I feel, this is my personal opinion, I feel like Final Fantasy II and Final Fantasy V got the best of the bonus content for the Game Boy Advance ports. Two had this like a whole extra game added on called Solar Rebirth. You play as the four characters who die, spoilers, throughout Final Fantasy II that are core to the plot. You play as them in this bonus dungeon, and you end up going and it was a fantastic dungeon. I don't remember too much of it because this was 7 years ago, I think. And that was sadly one of the only times I managed to play it. And then Final Fantasy V, I think I played through 6 months ago. I went through the bonus dungeon again, and some of those bosses were rehashes, but the actual dungeon was designed around the main plot. There was a story of one of the characters, which is how X-Death and the Void came to be, and one of the characters from that ended up being the final boss inside this added dungeon. And they did a really good job of tying that all together. I wish the other games would have got that kind of treatment.
TOES is a company that generally has a reputation for releasing pretty craptastic stuff. So, on the whole, how was their treatment of six compared to their usual output?
They did a better job with six than I don't necessarily want to say that people want to give them credit for because people are just kind of critical, but they did put a lot more work into six than I think more people will admit.
I mean, when you look at it, if you take your evaluation of it, it looks like they put more work into 6 than the, actual PlayStation 1 port put into
That's
6.
yeah, that was best possible. They might have had the backlash from six still looming over them. It's like, okay, you guys did this, it kind of sucked. Do better than that. And that could be why they did that, but we're not going to know. But six, the Game Boy Advance port, that did it did receive a lot better treatment, and I'm happy for that. It was a good game.
So I guess then we should, since you're basically like a, I guess you could call the resident expert for Final Fantasy VI, is there some particular aspect of the game that you consider more difficult than, say, something else? to hack?
Probably there's a very complex animation system that control how battles play out. There's a whole bank of program code set aside for this. And I think it's actually programmed with the NES mindset, because there's a lot of indirection involved. There's a lot of sloppy code where you'd have all kinds of jumping back and forth, where it just seems like do a branch, you know, just load a jump table, you know, or call a subroutine or whatever it is. That's one thing that we are actually trying to optimize and, you know, hopefully speed the game up in that regard. And then there's the sound core for it. I cannot figure that out for the life of me. There's this music code and it's like, what are you doing? How do I work you?
Have you made any progress, you know, from the music standpoint?
Sadly, I have not. All of our music work for this hack was done by other people. There's JCE3000GT. He also calls himself Blitzkrieg. He recently retired from the ROM hacking scene community recently, within the last month. My hat's off to you, sir. He did a lot of music work for us, and he just changed around some instruments, but some of the songs turned out so well. He helped us port some songs from other games into 6. It was really awesome.
Basically, for those who don't know, that for the older consoles, hacking sound cores engines was probably a little bit difficult, because I don't think they had a standard format, right? It was all a unique engine, pretty much, that they created from scratch.
Yeah, they just took this code, made, you know, every companies probably did one general core, and they just tweaked that as they need to for each games. And, you know, Capcom was kind of famous with this for the Mega Man games, where it's like one basic core that they use for all 6 of the NES games, but they just tweaked it to suit their needs for the sound effects of the music. Square kind of did that with like 3 or 4 revisions of the basic sound core for 4, 5, 6. 6 and Chrono Trigger kind of used the same core. Romancing Saga 3, I think, used the same core. Oh, there was another game, and I can't think of it offhand. I want to say Treasure of the Rudra probably used.
Yeah, probably it.
Yeah, they probably used that same core, or might have been one step up. I'm not sure offhand.
If I recall correctly, Treasures of the Rudra was like Final Fantasy 6-esque.
Yeah, it was. And again, I have to apologize to Gideon Z, because he really wanted me to play it. At the time, I never really had a chance to play it. He updated the translation 1 or 2 times. Like, hey, this translation is updated again. You want to try it? And yeah. I never got around to it. And I am so sorry, Gideon, that I haven't played that yet. And the game looks really fun, though. It does.
It is. It's the hacking on the, you know, on the actual, because how they do spells in that game is just astounding. Because you actually type in stuff for the listeners, and it generates a spell based on the words you put in. So, you know, for a longest time, people thought it was unhackable. But the actual game itself, just, it looks like very Final Fantasy VI-like.
Going back onto the hacking aspect again, this is just my general observation that I see with Final Fantasy VI hacks.
Mm-hmm.
And that I don't think you hardly ever see a variable width font or a proportional font in any of the menus, pretty much.
Can
you explain that?
It's something to do with how it's DMA'd to the video memory, you know, kind of getting into technical terms here. I'm not really sure why. I remember Chris RPG, rest your soul, he managed to get it working somehow. And that was going to be in the RPG E 2.0 translation, or not RPG. RPG 1. Thank you. It was going to be in the version 2.0 of their translation of Final Fantasy VI. Unfortunately, he passed away before that happened, but it looked like he made a lot of progress, and I really have no idea how he managed to pull that off. I wish I could have picked his brain about that.
If I recall correctly, they still have all the files for that.
Yeah, I think so. I remember Sky Render, the translator, he passed on some of those files to me. I wasn't really able to make heads or tails of it at the time, because he did expand the ROM and he moved a lot of stuff around. And there were a lot of detailed comments, but I couldn't really put 2 and 2 together to really figure it out.
Yeah, I guess when dealing with other people's work, I mean, his work is a hack of somebody else's work, so I guess that kind of complicates it.
Mm-hmm.
Just for the people who don't understand this type of stuff. So basically you have the original work, which Chris RPG had to reverse engineer and hack.
Mm-hmm.
And then basically, then you have his work, which you don't know what he's thinking, so you have to reverse engineer and figure all that out of a hack of a hack.
Yep. He had a gifted mind when it comes to ROM hacking, and I wish he was still around to, you know, so we could experience more fruits of that labor, because, you know, he had it.
That is, that's a shame, really, for the community.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, overall, would you say that Final Fantasy VI is a hard game to hack, or?
Well, I guess it depends on what you want to do with it. The game, from a hacking standpoint, has come along from the very basic monster stats, item stats that, you know, it's kind of started how the community started out. We, as a community, have figured out how the game's core engine runs. And what I mean by that is you can control very easily how NPCs around town walk around, what they do, what they can do. And that is probably still in its infancy, kind of. But at the same time, if you can get, you know, kind of wrap your head around it, then this game still has a lot more to tap into.
So I guess the main point is that is knowledge is power, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
So I do have to ask, what is the Final Fantasy VI randomizer?
Well, if I had Deserex Bot on, I'd just type in his command, but that's just a cheesy way to explain it, because it doesn't really give you the full answer. To kind of tell the story of how this came about, he actually started on the first randomizer. His first randomizer was Super Metroid. That just kind of randomizes item pickups. And then he's like, okay, I really like Final Fantasy VI. What if we tried applying that concept to this game? And then we're brainstorming back and forth, what can we randomize with this? It started out with randomizing your character palettes, what their names are, what their base stats are, and then it expanded into what's in treasure chests, what's in shops. We're going to add what you can steal, what drops from monsters. Oh, I kind of wish I had this item right now.
So you're taking FF6 and making an FF6 the roguelike.
Kinda. I mean, none of the story is going to change. None of the dialogue is going to change. You know, you're still going to get this character, and this character is always going to say the same thing. You know, their skill set may be randomized.
Are you going to do randomized dungeons, or?
That might be on the table. I'm not sure yet. There was some talk. Actually, Master Zed, some years ago, was actually thinking of doing an ancient cave style hack with Final Fantasy VI. Just randomly putting the dungeons out and just doing his own random encounter table, so monsters will get progressively harder as you go. And that kind of fell through. I'm not sure if he got much farther than the planning stages. And we might do randomized dungeons. I don't know. I'm not sure how he feels about that.
Cool.
Yeah. And then with the skill sets, you can have the last seed I played, I had Realm with a Berserker status, so she's a Marrow. She randomly rams into monsters.
The sprites work for this, where she can use throw or whatever? Or?
Oh yeah.
Excellent. I gotta see this, actually. I'm kind of curious, because that's awesome.
Yep. And there's one hack that he wants to add to this, and I could have swore a hack of this already existed, but this is kind of going into slightly intimate knowledge of Final Fantasy VI. Gogo and Amaro have no magic lists. They cannot learn magic. And he wants to hack it so whoever ends up with Gogo, you know, his mimic, and Amaro's Berserker, you know, whoever ends up with that, Gogo and Amaro will actually get those two slots for magic spells so they can learn their own unique magic. And I could have swore a hack of this already existed, but it looks like it doesn't, and I'm probably just losing my mind.
It happens to the best of us. I'm kind of curious, because if mm-hmm. we have a Berserker that learns dance, this could be amazing. Dancing Yetis, people, think about this.
Yeah, that can happen. That can certainly happen. So far, I've only tested a few seeds, but I've had Strago with dance, so he's dancing in his house that's burning down. Terra with Blitz, so she's just kind of bum rushing all around, and she's unfortunately Savin sprites when he does fire dance is still there. So there's still some technical things that I'm not sure how we're gonna work out, or if they even can be worked out with, you know, within reason. But for the most part, it's a fun experience, and you should try it out.
It does sound pretty interesting, I will say.
Dancing Yetis.
Dancing Yetis, yes.
I should put a video of that together.
That would actually make a good video, yeah.
I'm ending the podcast with Dancing Yetis.
Do you have any more projects for Final Fantasy VI planned, or is there going to be anything else in regards to that?
Well, Pandora's Box is still on the table. At some point, I'm going to come back to that. And I'm going to try and get some of the team back together because real life just kind of hit all of us at the same time. We mostly went our separate ways. We still try and keep in contact with each other, but finish that one for sure. And then, you know, just kind of help others out if they need it. And, you know, if they're asking for any kind of assistance, get people bugging me, you know, just poking me like, okay, how can I do this? You know, what kind of code can I use for this? And, you know, I always help them out. You know, I've never been opposed to helping people that ask for it. I generally try to stay away from just kind of giving away stuff and like, yeah, you can do this with this code change. And yeah, that's what patches are for. But to answer the question, to actually answer the question, I don't think I have any other projects planned for this game right now. The future, you know, we don't know what the future holds. That may change, but at this time, I really don't see any new projects coming out. And then Final Fantasy VI Randomizer version 2, I guess. I don't know.
Well, it's kind of hard to stick because you've done so much with Pandora's Box over the years that it's kind of hard to be like, yeah, we're going to move on to, you know, something new with this game that we've taken apart, put back together.
I've got it, Troy.
What's up?
I know what he can do as another project for Final Uh-oh. Fantasy VI.
Okay.
He can do a MSU1 version of Final Fantasy VI.
Uh-oh.
See, now this...
He can
this
figure out the sound engine and take the orchestral versions of the soundtrack and put them into the game.
After I read BU's page, the first thing I thought of was having these games have voice acting would be astounding. Having these games take their modern soundtracks and stick them in the old soundtracks would be awesome. There's just a lot of work involved with all that.
It would be a lot of work. For the voice acting thing, I guess you'd have to find enough people dedicated to do that. And then I don't know if there's any way you can avoid this, but it just might be a laughable process where you might end up with something like Symphony of the Night where, what is a man? And, you know, it'd just be hilarious to listen to, but...
We need to start with bad games. That's the point.
Yeah.
you start with terrible stuff, and then you work your way up to the good stuff.
Yeah, you kind of go, you know, you have Star Ocean 2, you have Legend of Dragoon, you know, the voice acting is just generally horrible, but it's also memorable and good.
I love Star Ocean 2.
Yeah, you like it for that reason, but you know it's horrible.
I always thought that Claude sounded pretty gay in Star Ocean 2.
Claude is awesome. The thing is, we don't know whether it's Claude or Claude. Ripper Blast. God, Star Ocean 2. Actually, the one thing I will talk shit about, Star Ocean 2 changing the PSP retranslation and, you know, remake, changing Dalacio into Gabriel, that sucked. I'm pissed about that still.
I actually never did get to finish Second Evolution. I got somewhere onto Energy Need, and, like, I just stopped playing.
Well, you're very lucky. If you continued playing, your game would have froze. I love Tri-Ace, my favorite company, favorite developer of all time. But they make the glitchiest, most broken stuff ever. Valkyrie Profile is so messed up. I've done stuff with it for years, and I'm fairly certain that the way the sound is coded into the game, that if you mess with anything in the sound, it freezes the whole game up.
Oh, that's not good.
It's just, it doesn't make any sense. It literally, it's mind-boggling. They're held together with, like, duct tape, and, you know, super glue. It just, it's...
Duct tape fixes everything.
Yeah. Not Kron, but everything else.
Okay, so let's bring the Final Fantasy VI questions all around.
Okay.
So considering that basically Final Fantasy VI is sort of your life's work in the ROM hacking community, do you think you'll ever do another project of that scope, or will you... basically take it easy after you're done with Final Fantasy VI?
I'll probably take it easy because it takes a lot of time and dedication. You know, the drive is there. I have the drive, but I don't think I have the time necessarily to do something on that scope ever again. And it's kind of a shame, but, you know, you got to do what you got to do, and you can only do what you can do, I guess. I'm not really sure how to, you know, how would I word that?
Understandable. Yeah. Again, real life has to take priority, and it's difficult to allocate time to work on a hobby when there's so much time, you know, that you have to dedicate. I envision someday there's going to be a bunch of retired ROM hackers, like, you know, actually, you know, and it's just going to be awesome.
You want to start a ROM hack and nursing home?
Yeah, every 65-year-old just friggin' pumping stuff out. Everything from NES up through MSX translated in a week.
And it would work so well because we already have people tending to us that we don't have to worry about anything else. Suddenly the nursing home doesn't sound like that's that bad of an idea.
Exactly. And you have interns, too. It's awesome. You don't even have to remember your own code.
Wow, we're terrible people.
I never claimed not to be. So. Oh, yes. Topics. Back on topic. Yes. So, FF6 as a game, there's a lot that you want to do to it because you obviously, you know, have a passion for the game as a whole. Is there anything about the game that really either turns you off of it or that you really can't stand?
Probably the second half of the game, the quote-unquote second half of the game in the World of Ruin. It's open-ended, which is a good thing. That's a really good, you know, that's a really good thing about the World of Ruin, but it's kind of like it's just balanced out, so it's like once your character is there, once you complete anything, the rest of the game is a cakewalk. That's one thing I really couldn't stand about the game. You know, we kind of got the idea to let's implement, you know, kind of like what Final Fantasy Tactics did. As you progress through the game, the monster gets stronger. You know, so even if you have some kind of base stats, you know, some kind of a base level, the monsters will still present some kind of a challenge. Strategy will still come into play. You can't just hold A to win or, you know, whatever the scenario is.
I have to say that's my biggest issue with FF6 is I do enjoy the game. Balance and glitches are my two big issues. Because I've been affected personally by the Realm Sketch thing, you know, in my younger days. And the balance is just, yeah. But that's also a trait of a lot of Squaresoft games from the time period, because Chrono Trigger wasn't an extremely difficult game either, you know. Recent Final Fantasies generally haven't been extremely difficult either. Mm-hmm. So.
7 was even worse for that because you mostly didn't even have to try. That was a game where you literally could just hold A to win, or, you know, circle, or, you know, whatever. For the PlayStation controller.
Same thing in 8, you know, the way limit breaks worked. You could literally hit nothing but left and X or circle or whichever it was and beat the game.
Yep. 9 was a little bit better for that, but it still wasn't the greatest because you can beat the game at level 1 if you really wanted to try for that.
I love 9, but the issue is I'm pretty sure I started it back in 2000, 2001. Mm-hmm. And there should be a battle finishing sometime in the upcoming week.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. The battle animations on the game they're slow.
I do love 9.
They're also very loud. That's one main thing about Final Fantasy IX I didn't like. The sound effects of that game, they will make you go deaf if you don't turn your TV down. They'll probably blow your speakers out too.
Now, here's the question for you. Is Final Fantasy VI like the most buggiest Final Fantasy game of all time as far as the main series is concerned?
That's a good one. That is a good one. I think just because of how much less is in the earlier installments of the game, they probably don't have quite as many bugs. You know, there's a few noticeable bugs with 5. There's the Kiss of Blessing mix, I think it's called. It berserks an enemy, and it completely ignores the immunity to whatever status ailments they might be immune to. So you can skip the second half of the final fight, for example. You don't even have to fight Neo-Axe Death. Whatever. Just throw this potion at him and kill him, and he's done. And let's see here. 4 was... I'm not really too sure about the bugs with 4. It's kind of sad because at my website, at my forums, there's a giant bug collection of 4 going on, and I guess I've ignored it, and I feel like a terrible person now. Sorry, Deathlike. I feel bad. And the only real big one I can think of in 2 was the Ripper Dagger. It's supposed to just add some added damage after your attacks. All it did was calculate a number and did nothing with it.
I got a couple for 2.
Okay.
Ultima doesn't work.
Oh, yeah. Ultima. That's a big one.
You can cancel actions after, like, choosing a spell to raise the spell level, but I think they fixed that.
Yep. They fixed that definitely for the advanced port. I don't remember if they fixed it for the Origins port or not.
Yeah, I can't say. I don't really remember much of the Origins port either. You could also, I'm pretty sure you could lose your airship in 2, but I don't know if that's a glitch so much as, you know, the player having to be crazy.
Yeah, possibly, but I don't remember.
I'm not positive.
You might be right. That could be a slightly undocumented bug, or maybe just not quite as well known.
In 6 NES, or 6 SNES, you can land your airship to the left of the island town, enter, and never be able to get back out.
Remember that's true. That? Yeah, that's a big one. We should probably fix that one.
That would be good. In 8, you can ride your chocobo to an island, get off, and be stuck, which is probably the only way you're ever going to die in Final Fantasy VIII.
Yeah.
In 7, you can do the same thing by losing your airship by releasing your chocobos, but again, you have to be crazy to do that by taking a golden chocobo and riding it over. Yeah. I don't consider human stupidity to be a glitch.
Yeah. I actually did encounter a crash bug with 7. If you guys are familiar with the port next to the gold saucer in 7, yeah, I remember I usually park my airship and the bird and the sub pretty much at the same spot. And I, in a weird game detection error, I managed to get the sub on land, and then the game just kind of froze right there because it didn't know what to do. The sub wasn't in water anymore. And that made me cautious of parking all 3 of those vehicles right next to each other.
I'm trying to think of massive glitches.
Oh, let's see here.
Chicken knife in 5.
Ooh, chicken knife. That's a good one. Let's see here. What's the bug with that one? Actually, that shares a bug with 6, so to speak.
The berserk with chicken knife?
Well, that too. But you know how when you use a command, like Final Fantasy VI had this command called capture? You know, when you put the thief's gloves on, it changes attack to, to actually just go up and mug them.
Yeah.
It actually loses your weapon data. So if your weapons had any kind of special rules attached to them, they were tossed out entirely.
Like even when you remove the gloves?
Yeah. Well, not when you remove the gloves, but when you try to use that command to capture, any special rules are tossed out entirely. And 5 actually had this issue. If you do, like the offering attack in 5, your chicken knife won't have a 50% chance to run away any strike now. It'll just keep firing and firing, and you can rack up insane amounts of damage that way. It's really abusable.
I didn't know that, actually. In 5, if you have the chicken knife and berserk, like, and your character tries to run away, it won't be able to run because of the berserk status.
Oh.
So it'll get caught in, like, a permanent running away animation until you reach that. Yeah.
Oh, that's a big one.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
Oh, wow. I never knew about that.
I read it the other day, actually. Couldn't have been more than a couple weeks ago.
Wow, that is a good bug. That'd be a good one to fix.
A little, yeah. I'm trying to think of other really game-breaking ones, because most of what I encountered over the years have been, a glitch in a black screen, which is just random.
Mm-hmm.
You guys still talking about glitches?
Yep. Ooh, yep. I encountered a really good one for Final Fantasy VII, actually. I was fighting Sephiroth. He cast Reflect on himself, and I somehow cast Reflect on myself. And I don't remember if it was him casting a spell or me, but it would just keep reflecting infinitely back off of each other, and the game got stuck.
I've never seen that one. That's a good one.
I'm not really sure why they changed that from 6, but, whatever. Reflect spells infinitely. Just let the game run.
Yeah, traditionally it's one reflect, and then, it pierces. 7's got the same issue that 6 has with the stats, where, spirit doesn't work.
Yep. Yep, your magic defense is like, it's always going to be terrible.
I think that good fix, actually. I think Gemini fixed that one.
Yep, and that looks like an awesome fix. I was actually playing a hack of 7 earlier. Was it this year? No, it was last year. It just has a generic hard type name, but they basically just kind of took the stats, jacked everything up from monsters, made your stats terrible. And really, the only challenging part of the game was Midgar. After that, it just kind of leveled off. There were a couple bosses that were really annoying, but it seemed like their stats weren't adjusted at all. And then I got all the way to the final dungeon and never beat Sephiroth because his AI was actually different. I don't know if I could think of anything to get around his one-shotting me.
I have that issue with hacks in general and hard types, you know, in particular, is that a lot of the community or members that are, you know, new to the community or even some longtime members of the community, they focus on making a game as difficult as possible because, you know, they played the game to death. And you see it a ton in Super Mario World hacks and stuff like that.
Yep.
And there's a place for that really difficult stuff. But I think if people understood, you know, a gradual incline in difficulty, you'd see a lot more people more willing to play, you know, these people's hacks.
Absolutely. I think part of that is it's, you know, they're basing the hack around their own skill level, you know, whether they play with save states or not. But if they can do something, they just assume other people can do this similar thing, and they balance it around their own ability. And some people may just make it hard, impossibly difficult for the sake of it. And, you know, it's just not fun like that.
I agree. I mean, there is a place for the, not that it's a ROM hack, but I want to be the guy type games, you know, there is a place for the Kaizo World Mario hacks, but you just see a major glut of them, and it doesn't, you know, nobody wants to keep playing those over, or most people don't want to keep playing those over and over and over again, because they're not fun, generally.
Now, if those levels, I think MC Kids got this right, I don't know if you guys played that for the NES or not, it had a secret world filled with impossibly hard levels, but you had to unlock them. You know, they just weren't available to you right off the bat. If some of these hacks kind of had that mentality where, okay, you have these really hard levels that you can access, but you have to unlock them, you have to find them, then it might be a little bit more acceptable.
I think the problem with that is that would require the person doing the hack to have some sort of skill to be able to do that.
Yeah, okay. You got a point there.
I think there's like a, that sort of requires extra technical level that they need to possess, which I think most people do them in editors, so, I mean.
Yeah, that's fair. I think it's a fair argument.
Whether, you know, even some people that use editors, but, you know, some people that create the editors. I've always been astounded by the amount of stuff you can do with a ROM hack, because you can extend the longevity of a game way beyond normal means, but the issue is balancing that for fun, you know, the fun factor of it.
Yeah, creating artificial barriers just to extend the length of the game, probably not a good idea. And I can admit that we actually did something similar to that in Pandora's Box. There's a section of the game after you complete the three scenarios where you fight Kefka on the snowfield. We actually made Figaro Castle not submerge right away. You had to go on a fetch quest way off to, like, Timbuktu, and you pick up a package, bring it all the way back just to get the castle submerged again. You know, some people kind of liked it because it was different, and I can understand why a lot of people didn't like it, because it's like, this is annoying and it just creates added time, and that's probably something we can adjust so you won't necessarily have to do it, but not doing it may create other consequences down the road.
Certainly be interesting to see where you guys go with that. I mean, literally, like, you know, another boss fight if you don't grab the package, or, you know, more difficult battles in here if you don't grab the package. Dancing Yetis.
We have got to do that.
Yeah. Were you attacked by the dogs?
No, they're playing here. I'm going to close the door.
Oh.
Hey, you can't have that.
I think he's going to disagree.
We're leaving that in.
The dogs like to grab stuff that they shouldn't and play tug of war with.
Yeah, like shoes or, you know, stuff like that.
They had a towel.
They're close enough.
Oh. Towels might be crossing the line because you still need those towels.
Usually. My cats sleep in my shoes. So, like, I have to check this. Well, one of my cats, the cat I've had for like 10 years is really huge. He's like 15 pounds, like, and he's long, like, you know, just a, but the other one's like 5, and I didn't know she was 5 when I took her in, but she weighs like 3 pounds. She still looks like a kitten. So she'll sleep in my shoe, so I always have to check my shoe in the morning now, because, you know, I don't want to step on her.
That just sounds so adorable. I got to see pictures of that.
Oh, Permakin? Yeah, she's adorable. I'll get pictures of Permakin at some point. Stick them on the romhacking.net. Advice to new ROM hackers or people specifically hacking Final Fantasy VI?
I guess with that, don't try to do too much too soon. That's, you know, that's just kind of general basic advice, but, you know, kind of know your limits. Make sure it's fun. You know, do something, you know, with a game that you enjoy. You know, don't do something just because there's a lot of resources for it. You know, it's kind of like how Super Mario Brothers, Super Mario World, stuff like that is. There's a ton of resources for it, but it may not be your cup of tea necessarily.
Like the quality to quantity.
Yes.
Is sometimes,
yes.
You know.
Yes, absolutely.
So then I guess aside from that, then there's hobbies outside of ROM hacking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've actually been a part-time speedrunner. I actually speedrun Final Fantasy 1 quite a bit. I don't do the original NES version because that has a lot of setup time involved, and I don't really have that kind of time to devote. It's about a 4-hour run, and you actually have to spend about almost half an hour trying to set up any run attempt. It's just kind of how the random number generation works with that game. I did a couple of Origins runs for the PlayStation port, and I've been concentrating on the PlayStation portable version of 1, which is very buggy, very broken in your favor, very exploitable, and it takes about an hour and 45 minutes to beat the game.
That's impressive.
Yeah, it's incredibly broken. Imagine the sketch glitch where you can kind of get weapons, and then take that to the PSP version where you can create weapons out of nothing. It's always going to be the same weapons, but yeah, let's give this incredible endgame sword that was added to this version and give that to you at Melmond and go destroy things. That's kind of how that game plays out.
So I have to ask, what party do you run in FF1?
If you've played, and you know, if you've played the original game at all, this won't seem like it's that good of a party. I have Fighter, Thief, Red Mage, and White Mage. And my thief is actually the damage dealer of the group. Contrary to, you know, I guess popular belief, but the thief is actually the best class in that version. Which is, you know, it kind of baffles me, but it works.
Do you speedrun anything outside of the, you know, Final Fantasy series, or is it...
Yeah, actually, I do. There's a Super Nintendo game made by Sunsoft called Roadrunner's Death Valley Rally. I've owned that game since we've had our Super Nintendo. It was incredibly fun. The physics to the game are horrible, but it's still a fun game. It's enjoyable, and yeah.
I used to play that with Super Street Fighter 2, so.
Mm-hmm. And I used to do Super Metroid. I've retired from speedrunning Super Metroid. I had the mentality for a long time of don't want to abuse bugs to play the game, you know, to do this, or this. And, you know, I kind of relaxed that a little bit, but I try to hold true to that mentality because it just cheapens your gaming experience. You know, it's like using a game genie. It's, you know, it's kind of in the same boat with me.
Can I ask what your time is on Super Metroid?
Real time, 1 hour, 29 minutes, 50 seconds for collecting everything. And then if you're just going to beat the game with the, you know, what you need, they call that any percent, 53 minutes and 52 point something seconds. I'm not very good.
It's all good. My best time ever was, you know, 2 hours, and that was... I'm a terrible Metroid player, so don't...
Mm-hmm.
Don't let
me. My Final Fantasy VI randomizer cohort, Deserect, he did 100% for the longest time, and he was one of the first people to beat Hotta Ruby's time. And it was a really big deal when that happened. Unfortunately, he lost his time a week later to someone else entirely. And that kind of, he's like, okay, whatever.
That's the way it goes with speedrunning, you know? I mean,
that is how it goes, yeah.
I'm not a speedrunner. I never really, you know, it's just not something I can really do. Cause if I'm going to play something, I like to enjoy it. And I, being stressed, I just, And especially if something like that happened and I got an awesome time and then somebody beat it a week later, I'd be
Speedrunning can be like that. It can be an added level of stress that you don't need. I just, you know, I play games casually now. I just picked up a PlayStation 3 not that long ago. I got the Final Fantasy X-2 port. I just picked up Sonic's Ultimate Genesis Collection for the PS3. It's got like 30 games on here. You know, Altered Beast, Streets of Rage, Vector Man. It's got a couple of the Fantasy Star games on here. It's got Beyond Oasis. It's got Rystar. There's Kid Chameleon. I picked up a continuation of a series I love, the Dynasty Warriors series. I have 7 for that. A couple of my coworkers wanted me to try out Borderlands 2 because it was such an awesome game, according to them. And I saw it on Amazon for $13 a couple months ago. So I swiped that up. And it was a fun game. It is a fun game.
We actually, we were just discussing that with Ian Nihen, actually, last time. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Awesome. And then I also picked up Star Ocean Last Hope. I haven't played that yet. Haven't had a chance to. I picked up the Kingdom Hearts Remix, HD Remix, whatever it's called.
HD.
Kingdom Hearts HD 1.5 Remix. Okay.
That's actually one I haven't picked up personally, but I got most of the others.
And then because I like the Persona series, I picked up Persona 4 Arena, and that's a fun game.
That is an awesome game. Man, that is an awesome game.
And then, you know, a little bit of advertising, free advertising. Persona 4 Arena comes out soon. I'm actually thinking about getting that.
What about the Souls games, like Dark Souls, Demon Souls?
I've actually never played Dark Souls or Demon Souls.
Well, you ever play Kingsfield?
I have not, actually.
Ooh.
Okay. Well, it's all good. I'll say that not that my recommendation means a lot, but I will say that I've owned 3 versions of the original Dark Souls. So I bought it when a friend gave me the original copy, which was the Asian release.
Okay.
And then I bought a copy, and then my brother bought a copy, which I have sitting up here, so I technically own it now.
It's sort of like a Japanese RPG dev does a Western design.
Ooh, that's an interesting twist.
It is. Dragon's Dogma is also very similar to it, but much, much easier. Dragon's Dogma is kind of like Capcom's take on Dark Souls meets Devil May Cry meets Shadow of the Colossus.
I've actually never played Devil May Cry. I've heard good things about the series, but I don't know if it's the gameplay or the storyline. It just kind of turns me off a little bit.
One of my
If you like Persona, they did a cameo with Dante in Shin Megami Tensei Nocturne.
Yeah, and it's actually kind of funny. I have Nocturne. I still have to finish that game. But yeah, I couldn't believe that they put Dante into that one.
An updated re-release after it got re-released back in Japan. Because Nocturne's actually, the original version didn't have the true demon ending, which got added to the U.S. re-release, which is Nocturne.
Okay.
Or in Europe, which is Lucifer's Call. They're the same game. But
okay.
when it got the re-release in Japan, they actually added Raidu Kuzunoha from the Devil Summoner series, which makes a lot more sense, both, you know, from a canon standpoint, thematically, because it's not Dante from another random series.
I think, I don't remember the reasoning behind it exactly, but I think the artist that drew Dante worked for Atlas at the time. And
Kazuma Kaneko, the artist for Shin Megami Tensei for Atlas, he did the Devil Trigger designs in Devil May Cry 3.
Okay,
so
that's what it was.
To pay back the, so they got the, you know, on the payback there, they got Nocturne, they got Dante and Nocturne.
Okay, that's what it was.
I knew it was something like that.
Yeah, it was something like that. I couldn't remember. Thank you.
No problem. I think Dante came to Nocturne first, and then to pay them back, Kaneko did the Devil Trigger designs the Devil May Cry.
Yeah, it's actually kind of funny on the subject of game re-releases in Japan. Final Fantasy VII was historic. When it was released in America, we were actually the first, states was the first to see Emerald Weapon and Ruby Weapon. And I guess that was a big deal at the time because the strategy guys were like, these bosses have a million hit points and you will never defeat them. And then when the game was re-released in Japan, sometime later, it was called 7 International, and they also received Ruby and Emerald Weapon, you know, for the first time for them. And I guess that was kind of a big deal, but yeah.
They did the same thing with 10's International version with the Dark Aeons, because we never got them in the U.S. till the HD port, so I'm quite thankful for that, because I'm actually playing that at the moment, so.
Yep. I, on a personal note, I just got to Mount Gagazet. I just finished Seymour Flux.
Nice.
And I'm on my way to Xanarkin to beat up Unalesca. Spoilers.
Spoilers. My bad. I'm also I also technically lied, because I set down 10 because I'm playing the 13 trilogy. So
okay, I've thought about picking up 13 trilogy because it looks like it might be good, but I'm kind of weary about how 13 plays.
I love 13, but I understand the first 60% of the game is a hallway. I'm not going to the comment words. The battle system is, if you put in the effort, you're rewarded tremendously by better item drops, faster battle times, but you can auto-battle your way through 60% of the game. I'm also not going to mince words there.
Okay.
See, for someone like me, like that, you know, inputs every command manually, learns the ins and outs, it's an awesome game. For somebody that just wants to speed to the story, probably not worth it.
Yeah, I guess there's a kind of a bit of a user experience that it feels like it's going to be wasted on for most of 13. I guess that's kind of what's been drawing me away from it. I don't know. Do you think the game as a whole is worth picking up, though?
Personally, especially now because it's cheap, yes.
Okay.
I really do.
Okay.
I think the story's cliche, but it also takes it apart and re-puts it. The story's good. The characters are cliche, but it takes them apart and puts them back together.
Okay.
One in particular takes the hero's journey, but he comes off as a jerk at first. It's awesome to see. It's amazing to see a character that thinks he's a hero in an RPG get beaten down and then take a hero's journey and actually become a hero in an RPG. So,
oh, wow.
But I don't know if people missed it or they were hung up on the battle, the battle system or what, but I happen to really enjoy it. It's 13, too, I don't like, just because it's a really easy game.
I've heard from a couple of my buddies in one of my other ROM hacking channels that 13.2 has an incredibly steep learning curve, and the game may actually be kind of relentless in that sense.
The issue is that, Gid really likes 13.2 compared to 13. Whereas I'm the other way around. And what it might be is because I played 13 first and they use the same battle system. I already knew it. Yeah, so going into 13, it feels like a cakewalk because I already knew, where everything was, how everything worked. The other issue, again, is 13.2 uses a very strange level up system where if you level up willy-nilly, it might actually be challenging. But if you have any understanding of how the level ups work, it's very, very simple.
Okay.
So, if you dedicate to one single stat, you're amazing in 13.2. If you try to balance it, you're mediocre.
That's an interesting take on it.
I find it really easy, personally, but 13.3 is relentless. 13's relentless in its second half.
I heard 13.3 tried to take on a piece of Majora's Mask book, and the aspect of, if you've played that game, you have 72 hours game time to beat the game.
I think it's 22 hours game time, like real time, is what you're given, but you can also stop time by beat an enemy, you get you don't get experience points and you don't level up for beating enemies. You get it for doing quests. So if you beat an enemy, you get points which you can spend to stop time at any time you want or fast travel to anywhere you want. So if you're like a completionist, you could literally, I think I had 24 hours of the game and it was 4 out of 7 to 13 days in.
Whoa.
Or you can just, speed through it. It's kind of your choice. But graphically, it's definitely a downgrade. The textures on it, it's clearly a downgrade from the previous two games.
Well, you think that at least the pull even, since it's probably using the same engine.
The battle system's different. It's more like not quite Star Ocean, but Tri-Ace worked on Final Fantasy 13 2 and 3, and it definitely shows.
Oh, okay.
Because they're a little more action RPG than they are straight RPG.
Okay.
3 in particular, is very much, I'd say it's closer to Valkyrie Profile than it is to a Final Fantasy game.
I've played some of Valkyrie Profile, and I've played Valkyrie Profile 2 a ton, and I liked Valkyrie Profile 2's battle system. You couldn't, it's not just a button mash, but you actually have to time things properly.
Very much the same thing in 13-3. But overall, I mean, it's an okay game, I guess. Not great. Stories I consider better than 13-2. Some would consider worse, you know.
Mm.
I really like 13, the original, though. I really did. Which is heresy on the internet nowadays, I guess. But screw it, I don't care.
Yeah, well, if you like it, you like it. If it's a good game, it's a good game. If it's a terrible game, it's a terrible game.
Yeah.
It's, you know.
But objectively speaking, I think it's a solid game that's got some flaws. There's not enough content besides, you know, there's tons of battles, but there's nothing really to do besides battles. No Blitzball or anything cool like that, like 10.
Mm.
There's a little bit, there's a Chocobo side quest at the end of the game, but that's it. And that's one of its primary issues.
Mm. That's a shame, because 7 had all kinds of just fun little stuff you can do on the side at almost any time you wanted. 8 had Triple Triad, which was automatic fun. 9 took a step back. I didn't really like Quad Miss that much. 10 had Blitzball. Yeah.
I finally figured out how to do like the Tetramaster, the Quad in, you know, 9. Mm-hmm. Apparently it runs off Hex. It took me like 10 years to figure this out.
Oh, wow.
Well, also the jumper open.
Oh, yeah. Oh. Forgot about jumper. And frog catching.
Frog catching needed some work. That one needed work.
that's 13's major issue, though, is the lack of side content, lack of stuff to do besides battle. So, And the resource management has moved from MP to actual resources, because you don't get gil for anything.
Oh.
And, yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, like, literally, you have to... You get items to sell for gil, but they're very rare.
Oh.
And the only way to upgrade your weapons and their equipment is to... upgrade them via items you buy or find.
Hmm.
So, very resource management-esque. Very much a very difficult game compared to the previous Final Fantasy. So.
Well, it sounds like it's still fun, so I guess at some point I will have to pick it up and give it a try.
I'd check a YouTube video just to see if it might be something you'd be interested in before laying down money for it personally. But
I think it's only like $12 right now.
Yeah. I'm not sure what it is. Yeah, I mean, I don't doubt it's very cheap. So.
Well, even if I buy it and not like it, I don't think I'm going to miss the $12 that badly. You know, I'll give it a try. I tend to give most games that I see a try if I think it'll be good.
If you like it, get back to me, please, because I'd love to have somebody to talk to it about.
Excellent. Will do.
My bad. People really hate that game. And I'm all like, well, I would talk to you about Final Fantasy IX, but I'm still waiting for the battle to be done. My bad, I hate on 9. I really did like 9, though. Music, graphics, even the chibi art style, and jump roping. Hell yes, jump roping. Mm-hmm.
There is one thing about 9 I really, really disliked, you know, besides the loud sound effects and the battle animations, and that was the specific item Excalibur 2.
Yeah.
Worst idea ever.
On one hand, I get it. You give speedrunners a reward.
Yeah.
On another hand, I'm not a speedrunner. I don't want a speedrun.
That just does not... I mean, it's clearly the most powerful sword in the game, but it's not worth the effort.
And again, I could spend 20 hours doing Chocobo Hot and Cold and get items almost as good as it. So screw it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not running through the game in 12 hours.
Mm-hmm.
I know about the Excalibur 2, but I don't think I ever wanted to put in the effort to do that, really.
I certainly
There was another PlayStation RPG called Sakoden 2 that did a sort of a speedrun thing.
Ooh.
Are you familiar with that game?
That's actually one of two games of that series I don't have and I've wanted to try.
Good luck finding a copy.
Yeah, that's... I have 3, 4, and 5. 3 is good, 4 is meh, 5 is a gem.
2's got a lot of issues in terms of typos and, you know, bad localization. Not bad localization, necessarily. I can't speak to that personally, but just, you know, typos and errors in the sentences. But as a game as a whole, it's one of the classics. It tells a classic story.
That's what I've heard about the game, and I've wanted to pick it up for that reason, because I've heard it's really, really good.
But I've never heard about the speedrunning thing. So.
No, here, let me explain it. There's a storyline in the game that you can uncover by getting to certain places and events within a certain time. And, Leno, my... fucking dogs.
That's awesome.
But basically, there's a storyline between Clive and Elsa, I think is her name. Clive is the cape guy with the hood, with the shotgun or whatever. Which, Troy, do you know who that is?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, yeah, so basically, if you, in the second game, if you go to a certain event within a certain time, you'll unlock something. And basically, by the end of the game, there's a showdown that you can unlock that lets the story play out. Which I've actually tried to do a playthrough at one point, Sokoden 2, as in to get all the characters and do the whole side quest within 20 hours, but it's really hard.
Well, if you get all the characters, it also, you know, that changes your ending as it does in, you know, most of the other games. So, but I've never heard about the speedrun thing. I'll check that out, because that would be a hell of a challenge.
Yes, it would be.
And if that game plays out anything like the other three that I've played, you know, they're kind of slow-paced games, so that would be a big challenge.
I guess they're a little different than their PS2 counterparts.
Yeah, the battles are kind of, you know, much, I don't know, I can't speak to either anyone but three, but the battles are much faster than they are in three.
Well, they are?
Just because it's not, there's not, they use sprites instead of, you know, 3D models.
Okay, so it's like Wild Arms 1 and 2 then, they used, or Breath of Fire 3. No, that's not really sprites. I'm thinking Breath of Fire 3 for some reason.
Yeah, much closer to Breath of Fire 3. You have a six-man team, usually, or six-person team. And, you know, they all take their actions on, like, a little isometric-looking thing. We veered way off topic, I'm just saying.
That's okay. It's informative, probably.
I don't know if this is take on the community and where it might be going in the future.
Probably observed this probably closer to 4 years ago. It seemed like the community was at a little bit of a standstill because there wasn't really anything really big to work on anymore. A lot of the you know, lesser known games had either been translated or hacked, and there was only a couple games left that a lot of people really cared about. And I know there's still a ton of games that can still be translated that, you know, we could probably spend an hour just listening through that, you know, going through that list. But, and I remember with romhacking.net, we tried the community hack a long time ago. I don't know if you guys remember that or not.
Oh, the community project.
Yeah, and for some reason, and, you know, I don't think I've actually mentioned this publicly, but I remember when it was chosen to do a PlayStation game, it was probably going to be a bad idea because there was only one PlayStation hacker at the time, Gemini, basically, and it kind of petered off. I kind of wish that, you know, NES or Super Nintendo or even Genesis would have been picked because there were more resources available to a broader selection of the community, and the project might have gotten off of its feet. And I'm kind of sad that that didn't really finish.
Well, from a personal standpoint, I'd love to see, you know, groups get together and work on some of the under-the-radar games or just something, because there's not always, but a lot of people are so comfortable in their niche that they never, you know, move beyond that niche.
That's true, yeah.
Well, you know, that's what I do, really. Most of the games that I've released in the past few years have been under the radar. But, of course, they're only for, like, the NES, so that's a little different. They're a little more basic sometimes.
Well, that's fine, too, because, you know, it's a game, it's a release, it's probably fun, then, you know, give it a shot.
You do some awesome games, Garrett, I'm just saying. Just throwing that out there.
I think the one thing I'd like to see the community, and I can probably say this of more communities as a whole, but, you know, just generally be more accepting of what other people are working on, because this seemed like a really big thing back in the day. You know, if somebody announced that they were working on X game, there was just immediate backlash for no real reason whatsoever. You know, I'd like to see, you know, I haven't really been able to pay much attention to the community, but I know it's gotten a lot better. Not necessarily just give a lending hand freely, but, you know, just be more supportive, I guess. What am I trying to say? I have no idea.
Excuse me. Be more accepting of people are working on stuff, even if they're not well known, or, you know, even if they don't necessarily have the track record to back it up.
At the same time,
you know, it's a difficult balancing act because, you know, there's a lot of people come into the step in with stars in their eyes, want to shoot for the moon, and that's a very difficult thing to balance out.
And, you know, there's always going to be the kind of kids that are out there is like, hey, help me, please, just do this, I want to do this, I want to do that. You know, you're not going to really do anything about that because those kinds of people are always going to be out there. But the ones that really want to give an effort, you know, just kind of you know, just kind of embrace them, I guess. I guess that type is always going to be harder to find because they're going to get drowned out by idiots and people just shouting, no, don't do this, don't do that, do this, do this instead, whatever.
I think we've come a little ways in that because it's not necessarily as bad as it used to be back in the day.
All right. I was actually thinking about streaming this little podcast here, but I was kind of worried that there'd be nothing to watch. It'd just be three guys talking that I decided against streaming.
Oh, you know what? I think I was going to ask, as far as streaming goes, since you do the speedrun, you probably have a streaming account too, so I mean...
Yep, I do. So, I'm on Hitbox.
Yeah, Hitbox, yeah.
Yep. I used to be on Twitch, but their bandwidth requirements just kind of pushed me out the door. I switched to Hitbox last year. I'm still kind of active on Twitch. You know, if somebody wants me to watch him, I can try. It's not going to work out though. Yeah, I still got some friends on Twitch. Some of them have moved over to Hitbox. I suppose, well, I could try and just spell it out, I guess. You know, it's just my username at Hitbox.
Lenopis.
Yeah, if you want to drop by, say hi. I stream Super Metroid. I stream Final Fantasy 1. I stream Dissidia. I kind of just stream whenever I feel like it. I do take requests, though.
So, now here's one for you. In the future, would you ever want to do some streaming of hacking projects, like if you were to pick up Final Fantasy VI again?
If I felt there could be people interested in actually wanting to see that, then probably, yeah.
For conversation's sake, I actually did some hacking live streaming. I'm not sure if anybody watched it, but one of the times I tried to do some hacking... My computer crashed on me, so I'm in the middle of it.
Oh. and then the stream went down, and people were like, what happened? Oh, I suppose that's actually one thing that I wish I could see. And this is kind of a personal request, kind of gripe-in thing. Some of the utilities that are out there are for outdated operating systems. There's a lot of stuff out there that's for DOS, for Windows 95 and stuff like that. They're probably never going to get updated. You know, some of the greatest hex editors of all time were made for these older systems. And as we move on to Windows 7 and stuff like that, there's not enough backwards compatibility for that kind of stuff. I guess, you know, I'm not really sure how to word this because it's probably just going to come off as a jerk request. But it would be nice if some of our favorite utilities could be updated, I guess, to work with the newer systems.
I guess the best way to do that is to go with, like, open source, though, like on GitHub and Assembler.
Open source would help with a lot of that. And I know a lot of programs were closed source back in the day. Yeah, it's kind of like playing Thief on a new system. How does your computer do it? You can't watch these videos or, you know, whatever the case is. Yeah, and I think the general response to that kind of request that I'm going to make is, you know, find the time and do it yourself. But, you know, I would love to do that, but I think you guys can speak to this too. There just isn't enough time to do all of that anymore.
Yeah, it's always a balancing act, everything, you know, in life.
Yeah, I've actually started a Final Fantasy 1 project earlier this year. I was going to make kind of an updated version of Final Fantasy Hackster, you know, just to kind of make it more project-based. So as you move stuff around, the editor will never crap out on you, and you'll always be able to edit all of the game. But I never realized how much of that game is hard-coded. So that project kind of fell apart.
Yeah, see, that's one of the things with the old NES games especially, is that you just have a bunch of hard-coded crap that is just hell to hack.
You know, this editor, I had all kinds of weird things going on. You can move stuff around in your menu relatively on the fly. You can rearrange how the battle screen is going to look out, you know, where menus are going to pop up, where stuff is going to be, you know, how the windows are arranged. And, you know, it was just going to be a much more in-depth editor, but I just kind of, you know, I kind of lost it after I saw how much of that game was hard-coded. And it's like, how do I make this work?
Basically, you'd probably have to rehack the game and de-hard code it.
Yeah, I'd probably have to rewrite the game from scratch.
Yeah.
And, not appealing. And I'm sorry for giving the hopes up for a few people that were looking forward to that project. I think I announced it in romhacking.net's IRC channel a couple of times. It was definitely an ambitious project.
Well, I can tell you, dealing with games that have a lot of hard-coded stuff, they are not fun to work on at all.
Oh, no, they're not.
So it's completely understandable.
Mm-hmm.
How about we end it on the the Final Fantasy VI hack with the bronies.
This is all you guys. My bad, but I'm stepping out of this one.
Well, I haven't played it, but I know of it.
Are you referring to Pony Fantasy VI or whatever that hack was called? Or
it was something like that.
Yeah, a friend of mine, MetaSigma, he streamed that hack several times, and it was more of a it's kind of a like a Mystery Science Theater 3000 type of approach where we're just kind of laughing along the way, laughing at it. Just kind of being in awe of what was done with the game. I don't really like the hack too much from what I've seen. They did an okay job with the sprite work, but the dialogue was just terrible. And I've never actually watched My Little Pony, so I couldn't really get into the universe of that hack too well. So I probably don't even fully comprehend or understand what's going on. But the hack as a whole doesn't seem like it's that well done, though. Again, my personal opinion that, you know, I fully admit I have not seen the show. I probably don't really understand what I'm criticizing. So, you know, launch your volleys at me at whatever.
So basically, you're saying it's a pile of horse shit.
Yeah. Yeah. You could put it that way.
And do you have an objective view on this, Garrett?
No, I just wanted to bring it up.
Okay.
All right. With the randomizer, there was actually one primary focus of why Deseret and I got together to put this together. Some of us speedrunners kind of like to race the games that we play, and that was one of the main focuses of why the randomizer came to be. To not only to randomize the experience, but so you get a whole bunch of people together to just race against each other with these crazy circumstances. So you can have Edgar just chucking people around, or you can have Realm throwing drills at people, or, you know, whatever the case is. And it would be a lot of fun. And we're actually going to try and get together next year, get a bunch of us together. Nitrodon, relatively famous Final Fantasy VI hacker, Deseret and myself, we're going to try and get together and actually race the randomizer at some point. Hopefully within the near-ish future, but we will see what happens.
Somebody's going to get bad luck in that. You know this, right?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. But that's usually how it works. It's still going to be a lot of fun, though.
Well, I'd like to end this podcast by saying thank you to Linophis for his time.
You are most certainly welcome, gentlemen.
Dancing Yetis!